quite a lot of vocabulary turned up in English as a result of Gallipoli and then in North Africa and, of course, in the trenches in Flanders and so on. It made a big difference to our language in ways we wouldn't have predicted before the people went off to fight in Gallipoli.
The ABC's Word Wizard. The Lord of Language. Professor Rolly Sussex with A Word in Your Ear.
Good evening, Rolly.
Hello there.
I'm glad I'm looking at you straight on tonight over the desk, because if you were on my right, I wouldn't quite be able to turn my neck and see you, because I have a crick in my neck.
Okay.
And when I told my producer, Georgina, that I had a crick in my neck, she looked at me with one eyebrow raised.
Yeah.
And she said, "You've got a crook neck?" And I said, "No, I've got a crick in my neck." And then I started to wonder, is crick a word?
It's a word, yeah. It's been around in English at least 800 years. It's very old. It's one of these orig uncert things. The dictionary doesn't know where it comes from. What I can tell you is that the Americans call a C-R-E-E-K a crick.
Ah, a crick.
A crick,
yeah, right.
That's where you go fishing. But that's
different again.
That's creek again, and creek is a different word entirely. That's, you know. But crick is a perfectly good, painful, stiff feeling in the neck.
Yes.
Muscles been twisted, torn a little bit, you know. I shall try and remember to stay square on in front.
Square on, yeah. Thank you. And just over your shoulder I can see Georgina. So, Georgina, the word crick is 800 years old.
Yeah. It's a real word, I suppose.
It's time to take it on. Words tonight that Rolly is keen to chat with you about are related to Anzac Day. And I wonder if you have a word that's related to perhaps Anzac, perhaps it's war or military. Have you got a kit full of Anzac words?
I've got all sorts of stuff, because quite a lot of vocabulary turned up in English as a result of Gallipoli and then in North Africa and, of course, in the trenches in Flanders and so on. And we'll get onto that in a moment. It made a big difference to our language in ways we wouldn't have predicted before the people went off to fight in Gallipoli.
And were they colloquial terms in English, or did they bring back some foreign languages?
Bit of both.
Right.
Bit of both. You know, I've got examples of all of that. Where to start? Okay. We've got lots of lovely things here. I think the most important thing was that Australia at the start of the century, you know, round about Federation, was socially very stratified. You know, there were people at the top who had money and education and so on. And there were the swaggies and so on who were travelling around looking for work. And they had their own sorts of language. Some of it we didn't actually know about in writing until we get to the Songs of the Sentimental Bloke, C.J. Dennis, in 1915. We can talk about that another day, because that was one of the first times someone wrote down the way we talk, and it looked very strange at the time. And it sold 60,000 copies in its first year. It was very popular.
Mm.
And we suddenly realized, hey, this stuff belongs to us, and it's different, and it's ours, right? But in Anzac terms, the upper-class people from the offices, you know, training corps and so on, and everybody else went to fight together. And when they came back, Australian English brought with it a whole lot of words which had been kind of shared and messed around in the trenches. And a lot of those were colloquialisms from ordinary Australian. Some of even the word Aussie dates from this period, spelt with a Y in those days, meaning an Australian soldier or a digger. Digger, by the way, came originally from the gold rush and the people digging things in, you know, Ballarat and what have you, but then came to be associated with an Australian or New Zealand soldier fighting in Europe.
Because of trenches?
Like
the
trenches,
literal digging,
yes,
connection, yes.
And it also did some very nice things to remind us that we've got some friends across the Tasman who are the closest things we've got to brothers, really, in spite of sporting rivalries and what have you. The word Anzac itself is fun, though.
Yes.
Because it was originally an initialism, which means you, A-N-Z-A-C, as Qantas is, Queensland and Northern Territory Aerial Services, right? But if you take that word and pronounce it, if it is pronounceable, okay, like Qantas, then it becomes an acronym. And technically speaking, an acronym is a pronounced one. And what happened to Anzac was it was pronounced, but it was written in capitals. And then with the blessing of the Australian War Memorial, it's now written with a capital A and the other letters are lowercase.
Mm.
Which I think is a kind of compliment, because it means that we have adopted the word in all its complexity. It's now a regular part of the language. It doesn't even stick out there with capitals. And so Anzac is very much us. And I like that. It in many ways, it says something about the way in which we've adopted it.
Yeah. Just going back to the word Aussie, A-U, was it double S?
Double S-Y.
Y. Mm. Because some people will, there's multiple ways to spell Aussie now.
There are.
A-U-S-S-I-E.
Yes.
O-double-Z.
Yes.
I-E.
Yes.
O-double-Z-Y.
Yes.
Possibly as well.
Well, in those days it was A-U-S-S-Y, and I think nowadays overwhelmingly it's A-U-S-S-I-E.
Mm.
And the Times of London says the Aussies are coming, meaning the cricket season is about to come upon us. And it's reused by everybody, including by us about ourselves. So that, you know, it's been established. But some of the other ones from the trenches on Gallipoli included things like coffin nails for cigarettes. Now, these are kind of black humour in a way. I mean, the conditions in the trenches there and in Flanders were unspeakably bad. And there's a really gut-tearing poem by Wilfred Owen about people being gassed with mustard gas and so on. Awful, dreadful things. So I suppose laconic humour was a way of making it livable. They called the cook a babbling brook. And that, of course, is an echo phrase because it's babbling brook, okay. And when you get a phrase like that with echoes of sounds, echo phrases, they become more sticky in memory.
Yeah.
And we've got lots of them.
So, and also that makes me think of like Cockney rhyming slang.
Aye, that's...
Is that different again?
That's different again.
Mm.
Because Cockney rhyming slang is... So babbling brook is always babbling brook. You never cut it into one piece or the other. It's always the two together. But Cockney rhyming slang, things like give us a Captain Cook, meaning give us a look, right? One of the really evil things that we do, first of all, you start off with give us a Captain Cook, and there's the word cook, and you say you look at what the person might be saying, and you guess, oh, well, that means look, you know, we got the rhyme cook and look. And then you take away the rhyming word and say, just give us a captain, all right? Or he's done a Harold, meaning Harold Holt, who
Bolt.
Did a Bolt, all right?
Yes.
And so Australians love playing with language. And sometimes we do so in a way which is going to make things a little difficult for someone from overseas. And if you go to Earl's Court in London, you will hear Australians using it more than anywhere else.
True, true.
Say, we're Aussies over there and we're cutting the others out. More examples. Bully beef, which is a dreadful spam sort of thing, in tins, which they didn't have a lot of good things to eat. Dial, your face, because you've had a bit of a stoush. Dial from the early, I imagine, telephone days when you still had. We still say ring me up, you know, even though we don't ring anymore.
No. I was also thinking like sundial.
Could be sundial, mm. Yeah. But the one I'd love to say a few words about before we get on to some other words is furphy. Because furphy in modern Australian is a kind of slightly implausible story. Right, and it's not bad. That's a bit of a furphy.
Yeah, it's not quite a lie.
Not quite a lie. You're pulling my leg. Are you having me on? You know, don't come the raw prawn with me type of thing. It's again, language play, meaning testing someone's credibility. Furphy is still in business in Shepparton. They are a foundry. They make metal things. And before the First World War, they made Furphy's Farm water cart, which was 150 gallons of metal tank on a frame which is pulled around by horses or donkeys.
Hang on, so is furphy a name
furphy
of a
is
family?
A name,
yes.
Of a family.
Uh-huh.
They're still there.
Oh, there you go.
It is an eponym, which is when something is named after someone real in real life. So that's it. And they took these things to the front, and the soldiers would come and have a drink of water. The water in the trenches was often awful and polluted and so on. And so the furphy water cart was a place where you can get a decent drink. And they'd chat about what was going on in their end of the trenches and so on. And gradually some of the stories got a little bit more and more, you know, far-fetched. And furphy himself, he wrote on the back of his water carts, good, better, best, never let it rest, till your good is better and your better's best. And, you know, as a kind of general piece of advice for life, that wasn't too bad.
I love that.
It's rather nice. But then, this is the weird bit. You know what Pitman is, the Pitman shorthand? It was a form of writing squiggles.
Yes.
Invented by Sir Isaac Pitman in the 19th century.
Taking notes. Journalists used to have to
That's
learn
right.
it. Not anymore, I don't
That's
think.
That's right. And they, I've seen professional Pitman writers.
Yes.
They could go an incredible rate. Anyway, on the back of his cart, in Pitman, he wrote, "Water is the gift of God, but beer... Sorry, water is the gift of God, but beer is the concoction of the devil. Don't drink beer." Now, the soldiers wouldn't have been able to read Pitman, probably, unless some of them were clerks. So this was a little bit odd. And then he changed it in 1942, because these things were still around in World War II. "Water is the gift of God, but beer and whiskey are concoctions of the devil. Come and have a drink of water." And then they added something which is supposed to be a quote from our Prime Minister Hughes, "Produce and populate or perish." In other words, have a drink of water and have lots of babies.
Mm.
Which was, you know, again, playing with language in a very Australian and really obscure way.
Yeah.
If you can find a Furphy water cart, buy it. It's an absolute piece of our history walking around.
For sure. Furphy, such a common word.
Yep.
Didn't know the whole history behind it. And Furphy, still a foundry
in Shepparton. Yeah.
Today.
As far as I know, they're still there. The Americans, not to be outdone, have a different word, scuttlebutt. Now, the scuttle's it's on a boat, and it's a bit on the edge of the deck where the water runs through a hole and out and down to the sea again, or the lake or whatever. And a butt, a B-U-T-T, is a barrel. So the scuttle butt was the barrel in the scuttles with water for the sailors. But for me, in my modern Australian English, scuttlebutt is nastier than furphy. A furphy is an amiably tall story.
Mm.
Scuttlebutt can be slanderous, a bit nasty, trying to knock someone down.
Creeps into gossip territory.
It does a bit, yes.
Yes.
But it's interesting that they've got two different words from the same source of drinking water.
We'll take your furphies and maybe some scuttlebutt. Mike has called in from Redland City. Hello, Mike. Here, what's the word you want to ask Rolly about?
Bluey.
Bluey?
Bluey. Whoa. Bluey used to be a bushman's or a swagman's bundle of possessions. And it's also, of course, in Australia, the name for a red-headed person, which is really perverse. I mean, why would you call someone with red hair blue?
Yeah.
But I've got in the back of my head, it was some sort of telegram or something. Is that right? I haven't thought about
it. No, they were Irish Catholics.
Ah, yes.
Oh, okay. Yes. So that's a different definition again.
Yes.
Okay. Well, maybe we'll put that on as homework for next week. I know Rolly, I had a friend growing up, her dad was in the army and had red hair, and he was called Blue.
Yes.
Everyone called him Blue.
Yeah. Just as, you know, teachers are chalky or whatever. Blue. People with red hair, army or not, are Blue.
Are called Blue. Okay. Mike, thank you for that. We'll add Blue and Bluey, and of course, more recently, the entire world knows Bluey
as an
animated
cartoon
dog.
From Brisbane, be it note.
Yes.
And something which has become an enormous... It's actually doing things to American English. The kids in America are saying, "Mum, can I take out the rubbish bin?" And Mum says, "It's a trash can, dear."
Yeah.
And the children say, "Well, it's not what they say on Bluey."
From Bluey, we go to Kangaroo Point. Austin, good evening. What's your question for Rolly?
Well, look, Rolly, a short while ago you talked about the complexity of the word Anzac.
Yes.
I've been interested in how I always thought things were simple or things were complex.
Mm-hmm.
But lately I've been hearing an awful lot of youngsters talk about things being complex. And that sounds just very wrong to me.
Yep. It depends where you grew up. You grew up in England, it sounds?
No, Adelaide.
Adelaide. Oh,
la-di-da. Right.
The educated Adelaide is very nice to listen to. Thank you. All right. There are a lot of words in English where the word stress is in play. Even in Melbourne, they don't know whether it's Toorak or Toorak, Fitzroy or Fitzroy. And this is one of those. Now, we used to say baton. No, the marching girls had batons. Under American influence, we're now saying baton. And do you remember the film about the Green Beret, the bridge over the River Kwai? We used to have berets when I was young. Well, that was a long time ago. Now beret under American influence. When the Americans find words which come from French, where you have a stress on the last syllable, like perfume, they tend to keep that stress and it contrasts with ours. Now, complex, of course, is a French word, and the Americans sometimes say complex, but I've heard Americans say complex as well. If it's a noun, I live in a residential complex. I don't think a residential complex, that sounds very strange. But yes. if it's complicated, I've heard both complex and complex. But the one in the dictionary is certainly complex, right? So stay with that and listen out for other examples. You'll find cigarette. You'll find lots of them around.
Great observation, Austin.
Good. Look, I've got another quick one. Really, I listen to a lot of things on YouTube where they give instructions for things. And
yes.
Americans keep telling me to go ahead and do something. Go ahead and press the red button. Mm. Why don't we just press the red button? Why do we have to go ahead and do it?
Okay. I think this is because if you just say do this, it sounds rather peremptory, a bit like an order being given by the sergeant major. And so what we tend to do is, if there's an order around, we soften it. You know, would you like to, or would it be possible for you to, rather than sit down, all right? And go ahead, I think, has that sort of function. Would you go ahead and do this, meaning would you like to gather your forces and concentrate and do this? It's a slightly softer way of doing it. I think that's what it means. But I was talking to our producer about this before, and we realized that, you know, if you want to go ahead and do that, then it's going to be on your head. Now, that's almost a threat. In other words, you're being perverse and unfriendly and uncooperative.
Go ahead.
Yes.
Make my day.
Oh, of course, yes. Clint Eastwood.
Yeah.
All right, thank you. So I think this is one of those little bits of English which, when you look at it, you think, why is it there? Does it have any function at all? And when you dig ahead and dig in and have a look at the contexts, they do actually have some other things to say as well.
Great observations, Austin, from Kangaroo Point via Adelaide. Lovely to have you along for tonight. Just on Americanisms and, you know, softening, one thing I did notice when I lived in America was how blunt the language was in bars, in a hospitality setting.
Yes.
Like, I remember walking in with my friend Jim. He'd walk up to the bar and he'd go, give me a whiskey and dry or whatever. Mm. So there was no... G'day, mate. How are you going? Yeah, can I get, you know, in Australia, it's you have this kind of back and forth small talk.
Yes.
In America, straight to it. And then there was a guaranteed tip at the end of it. But it was a really blunt exchange.
Yes, yes. I've got a new word for you. P-H-A-T-I-C, pronounced fatic.
Yes.
All right. And it was a word introduced into English by a Polish ethnographer called Malinowski in 1923. And it refers to small talk and language which you use to create and sustain social relations. So if I say to you in the morning, good morning, how are you? I don't expect a medical report. It's a formula which you use. You say, hi, how are you? And it actually sounds a little bit strange on radio. You know, how are you going, so-and-so? Oh, how are you? And people get kind of caught up.
Yes.
Their phatic communication is very important because knowing when to say these things which are part of saying to someone, I'm pleased to see you there, I hope you're pleased to see me, you know, isn't it a nice day sort of thing.
Social cues.
Social cues.
Yes.
But we will talk about phatic because it's different in different cultures. And if you speak another language, knowing how to do small talk in that language is really a test of how good you are.
What is the opposite of small talk?
Oh, just ordinary informational.
No, but is there a term for it? Like, is it large talk? Is it big talk?
No. Just ordinary declarative talk.
Declarative talk.
Yeah.
Okay, got
But, you know, we tend to think that language is there for passing information, asking questions, giving orders and so on. In fact, it does all sorts of other things as well.
Yes, indeed.
I've got some more from the front.
Let's do that.
Plonk. Do you drink plonk?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, right. It comes from French vin blanc, white wine, B-L-A-N-C. And, of course, the soldiers didn't learn any French. They saw that and they thought, oh, blank. And it became blank, became blanc, became plonk. And so plonk became a general purpose word for alcohol, not just white wine, of any description. Some of it was probably pretty dreadful. And you also get plonko from that, someone who is excessively addicted to alcoholic beverages.
Plonko.
Plonko. But this is a bit like refo and dero. They're dated. I think a lot of these things are, they started falling out of use in the 60s, I think.
Mm.
When people who had a direct link to the wars were starting to pass on.
Although the O on the end of a name has certainly stuck around, Steve-O, Dave-O.
Oh, yes. And in WA, they have Rotto for Rottnest Island and Frio for Fremantle. and Rocco for Rockingham, which is a part of Perth, different from our Rockhampton, which is Rocky.
Yes.
And it actually differentiates the two states quite clearly.
Don't mix your E's. Here's another one.
Have you ever had Burgoo? B-U-R-G-O-O?
No.
You might have had Burgul, B-U-R-G-U-L, which is Arabic, and it's a sort of wheat porridge. And so the soldiers in North Africa picked up Burgoo, and it was one of the things that they ate when they were... This is more Second World War, I think, than First.
Mm-hmm.
Also, by the way, Bint, meaning a girl. Bint is the Arabic for a woman, or daughter of. So-and-so, Bint so-and-so, means so-and-so, daughter of such-and-such. So all of those, chocolate soldier, a shirker and a slacker, all come from these.
Hang on, what's a chocolate soldier?
A chocolate soldier is someone who isn't really there to be a serious soldier. They're trying very hard to avoid getting conscripted or to avoid going in the first wave that goes over the top when they're fighting. It comes from a play by George Bernard Shaw about 1894 somewhere. But it's definitely not a good thing. Chocolate soldier is someone who isn't in there for real.
Got it.
Conchi, who's a conscientious objector. Okay. Shirkers and slackers also were people who were trying to avoid doing their bit, particularly getting signed up. Civvies, meaning it's like mufti. Both are words for a non-uniformed dress. Mufti comes from Arabic. A brass razoo. It's not worth a brass razoo.
Also, sorry, just with civvies for a second, you can use the term civvies even if you're not talking about someone who's come from the military, can't you?
Oh, yes.
Someone who wears a uniform at some form of work might say that they're wearing civvies if they're in...
I think so, yes.
...tracky dacks or something. Yep.
Guts and to come a gutzer.
Huh.
Not very common nowadays. Again, the more I looked at these, the more I thought they really do show their age.
Kamagutsa might be up there with Crick. Rolly Sussex Lawrence says, is there a correct way to pronounce lieutenant or leftenant?
Ah, nice
or does it depend on the country you're in?
Not only that, it depends on which service. Mm. Lieutenant is in the Army and the Air Force in Australia, but a lieutenant is in the Navy. I think that's right. And the Americans call it a lieutenant for all three.
Ah.
Yeah, lieutenant is the... They never say lieutenant in the American Armed Forces. So for us, it depends which service it is. And I think it's the Navy one, is it lieutenant? The others are lef. And it comes from lieutenant, which in French means holding a place, and someone is holding a position for someone else, as it were.
I didn't even get to our word for weather lovers. Your ears should have been burning last night. Perhaps we'll do a weather.
Can we do weathery terms? Because they're interesting.
Yeah.
Because meteorology, the word meteoros in Greek just means lofty or high. So a meteorologist is someone who's interested in the stuff up there.
Okay, let's perhaps do that in the coming weeks. A final word from you tonight.
Yes, this is a sort of a military one. Why do the Swedish, Norwegian and Danish navies have barcodes on the side of their ships?
No idea.
So that when they come to harbour, they can scan the navy in. Scan the
navy in. I get it.
You get it.
Rolly Sussex.
That one fell a little flat.
No, I just took my brain a little bit of time to get there.
You've been listening to A Word in Your Ear with Professor Rolly Sussex, a podcast from ABC Radio Brisbane. Every week on the ABC Listen app.